This is The Film Effect with Tiff.
Hey, Divine. What you looking at?
The old neighborhood.
There are places that make us who we are.
Save!
I used to play on this street when I was a kid.
Really?
Moments that give us hope.
Do not make her laugh. Where have you been?
Feelings that make us question our beliefs. Fears that trigger our darkest emotions.
It's my daughter's God.
He's got my daughter in there! He's got my daughter in there! No! Oh, God!
For a couple seconds on Saturday, she looked at me like she was preparing to never see me again.
You don't think I'd hurt her, do you?
She isn't hurt, Brendan. She's dead.
I loved her so much.
I know in my soul I contributed to your death, but I don't know how.
I'm gonna find him before the police do. I'm gonna find him and I'm gonna kill him.
You know what I was thinking about? Vampires. Maybe one day you wake up and you forget what it's like to be human. Maybe then it's okay.
You're not making any sense.
Sometimes I think all of this is just a dream, you know?
How about you tell us what really happened Saturday night, Mr. Boyle? And why's your wife acting like she's afraid of you, huh?
Everyone is weak. Everyone but us. You could rule this town.
Bury us in here.
Run! Run! Dave, run! Run!
We wash them clean.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
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 Hello.
It's The Film Effect. I'm here. And I have Tara.
Hi.
Tara.
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
We'll go with that. Today I'll be Tara Elizabeth.
Maybe you should have a whole new name, like Madonna or something.
I don't know. We always have this conversation about my name when I come on, whether I'm Tara, Tara Elizabeth, Tara Gush. I don't know. I like my middle name, so
I can just call you Tara.
Yeah. Either one.
I mean, I don't ask people. People don't ask me my... You're right. No one's like, what's your last name, Tiff?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Tara's
okay.
Fine.
Well, Tara's back. So I'm super excited, and she was willing to come on, and we really just randomly had a pick last night for this movie, and you had just seen it, and it's pretty serious.
It's pretty dark, yeah. And I don't... I don't watch a lot of movies, really. I really don't watch a lot of TV in general. If I do, it's a movie. I have a hard time getting into series unless they're, mm-hmm. like, amazing. Because I'll watch, like, the first two or three, and then I'm like, ugh, nope. So movies are my thing if I just need a night to veg out. And that was the other night. And I, like I told you before, I get on Netflix, and I don't like taking a lot of time to search. So this was, like, one of the first three movies that popped up. And out of the three that popped up first, it looked the most intriguing. And so I watched it, and... yeah, it's kind of fucked up.
It's a pretty serious movie. It's funny. I have seen it. So it was like, oh, yeah, Mystic River. If you guys are with us, and you probably, I usually have something in the beginning, which you probably have already heard by now. So, yeah, Mystic River is a serious movie that came out. It was a big star-studded movie, amazing performances, and a pretty dark story, actually. And one of those, like, gritty movies where, and I was just mentioning this before we started recording, for anyone like watching Mayor of Easttown, all of my people out there, we should do a whole show on this specific show itself, but it has a very similar feel, which is you're in this, like, I don't know, kind of small town, people that have difficult lives or difficult stories, any way to start, and very real, has like a real flavor to it than like some Hollywood movies that you see. And I think this movie was, I think it was kind of special because it was doing that kind of thing. And the other show, Mayor of Easttown, just takes it like so far over the edge with that. But thank you for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and now you found already a theme within like 2 seconds of talking.
Oh, yeah, as we're talking.
Like, there's trauma all over this thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I actually was thinking, when I was thinking about it last night, there is a lot of that in it. But also I was thinking about loss. Mm-hmm. And like what happens to people when there's loss and how they respond to that, like how they grapple with it. Maybe just because I'm going through sort of a death, I'm going through a divorce. Mm-hmm. I'll share it. I don't mind. And that feels kind of like a loss. And it also is kind
traumatic.
Of like a death. Yeah. And yeah. So here we go.
Yeah. And divorce is. I mean, I've explained that too. Because I mean, I am coming out. I'm, what is it, June? I'm 2 years.
Whoa.
Right? So my divorce is 1 year old. Man. And my separation is 2 years old. So
yeah.
I'm going through different phases now of the grief. I just had this conversation actually with somebody I went for a walk with this morning. We are talking about these phases of things. When you're talking about loss or grief, and I'm going in and out of these anger phases still. You know, yeah. Like you go through sadness, denial, you know, sometimes it's depression, whatever. But I'm getting these waves of anger, which is interesting because it's so far out, you know, and I'm like, why am I feeling this still? So I started kickboxing, totally off the topic of this movie now.
Sweet.
But
can I join, please?
Yeah, but I said, you know, because I do yoga and I meditate and Pilates and I'm doing all these lovely calming things. But I'm like, you know what? I feel like I need a different outlet. Mm-hmm. Not that I want to be angrier, but I need an outlet that's appropriate for me to get my anger out.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, take it back down. So, yeah, it is. It's like a death. But, yeah, there's a lot of loss in this movie, which loss and death and grief and divorce would all be forms of trauma. So
yeah, you're right. It's all trauma related. Mm-hmm. Even the opening scene is just, oh my God.
Yes.
It's crazy. Yeah. All right. Well, I will give to my listeners, let me give you the information here. If you're like, what is this movie? What's the deal? And oddly enough, the name is so funny because when does the river come in? Is it just where it is? Like Mystic River is such a strange title. For this story, right?
Well, I find the word mystic to be strange, but the word river, the water is in the movie.
Okay,
and
yes.
They are on the water. The river is involved, right?
Yeah.
So we won't get into it, but the final scene, one of the final scenes which we discussed is on the river.
Okay,
and
right.
Is of importance.
And the poster is like three guys with the reflection of them in the water. So, yeah. Okay. So, Mystic River, 2003, this movie came out.
I didn't realize it was that old.
It's actually directed by Clint Eastwood, interestingly enough. And I think that was when Clint was having his, like, period, you know? He's, like, made a Western. He made this. Like, he was in his directing, like, what do you call that? I have no words.
I don't know.
He was doing it. He was making a lot of movies for a while. He made a lot of movies for a while, and now he's just, I don't know what happened to him.
He was in his zone.
He's old now, but he was in his prime. That's the word.
Okay.
He was in his directing prime. You know, he went from his acting prime to his directing prime, and this was one of his movies that did really well. Written by Brian Helgeland, Dennis Lehan. I guess this was a book. Interesting.
Okay.
Stars, amazing, amazing people. Sean Penn, Tim Robbins, Kevin Bacon. Hold on, wait for it, because there's Marcia Gay Harden. Marcia! Freaking love her. We also have Lawrence Fishburne, Laura Linney. I mean, everybody in this movie, it's ridiculous, this cast. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how it's just an amazing cast of people, especially Sean Penn at the time. I think I don't know what he does now, but he's such an amazing actor too. Yeah, and so basically this description, the lives of three men who were childhood friends are shattered when one of them has a family tragedy. That's loosely put.
Yes. Because I read that description. And normally I watch the trailer, right? And I didn't. I read the description.
Bold, yes.
And I'm like, well, that sounds intriguing. Whatever.
Yeah.
Worst case, I don't like it. And then as you start to watch it, like everything that unfolds is like, whoo.
No, and we start right out with a kid being molested. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just going to say it. Like, it starts out with, and you know something bad's about to happen.
Yes.
You know, it's like they're playing on the street. They're just a bunch of boys. One's a little bit like feisty, getting them to do things they shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And then these two men pull up. Can we just talk about how weird that was?
Yes. So it took me a while to figure out like what was going on. Cause at first I really thought it was cops. And I was like, oh, these cops are just gonna fuck with these kids and they're gonna take one of them away and like beat them up. You know, I wasn't even thinking until they get the one kid in the back seat and the guy turns around and flashes his ring with the cross on it.
Yeah.
But interestingly, you know, in the beginning, they don't just come out, you just make the assumption that the kid gets molested or kidnapped. That scene doesn't come out until I think a little bit later, isn't it? Or is it right?
Well, what I sensed, and the weirdest part about that scene was his instant reaction to getting into the car. Mm-hmm. And what was weird was, like, there's the back seat, and he looks, they show you the back seat.
The floor of the back seat.
The floor of the back seat, which I couldn't.
There was trash.
It almost looked like there was a condom in there too.
It could.
I was just like, what did I just see? Was that like, that looked really sketchy. And then he was like not wanting to get into the car. And then he's like, get in the car. And I'm thinking like, did this already happen to him? Or did this, like something felt funny to me. Like maybe there was already an interaction with this. Cause then you know it's a priest or a something. Cause he's got the ring, which by the way, now I'm so sorry, priests, forever. Because if there's a guy in a car with instantly you just think, oh no, molestation. Like that's literally what you think, which is kind of depressing, but I guess that's what we think now. And especially in a movie, that was my first thought. I was like, oh no, he's going to get it, you know? And it was just the vibe of the men and the kid. And then you see him in this like, oh my God, that
dungeon
room. And he's like, no more. No, you know, it's horrible, horrible. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, they just quickly move through that piece where now you're suddenly seeing him like he's been rescued and he's in his house and the shades close like he's with his mom. And then it's just like nobody ever talked about that again.
Right. And then it just goes right to adulthood.
Yeah. Now they're adults. Boom. Right.
Yeah. Which interesting when we're talking about the topic of trauma, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens a lot. It's this whole just sweeping something under the rug. And that's kind of a theme of this movie, right? So look, when we get to what actually happens with these adult males, especially back in the time frame that that had occurred, nobody was talking about that stuff. So I'm pretty sure that kid didn't go to therapy.
Probably or, not. No.
You know, have any help dealing with that. And then you end up with these adults who have all these issues because nothing was dealt with.
Very good point. So, Tara, now that we're getting into this, do you want to share any of your like stuff, plug any of your stuff since you're here?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, so you are like, you're not just somebody talking about this stuff. I feel like you have some, you can share with people
some
listening.
Background. We've brought up the topic of trauma a lot, and that's not why I chose this movie, honestly, because I said, I didn't know what it was about. But I host another podcast called the Be Soulfish Podcast, and I'm also the founder of a company called Soul Vitality Transformative Living. And so I am officially now working as an emotional wellness coach, which combines working through emotional wellness, physical wellness and health, using yoga and breath work and gut health coaching and all the things to really work with people who have been through trauma or grief or loss or just chronic stress, like life in general, but working through that. And I have my own story from childhood and into adulthood as well. So this is a big thing for me. And I worked in the school system, and that came up in my mind too with this movie even, because I worked in special ed for 10 years, and there was a lot of, you know, wild stuff with the kids, and it's, you know, this kind of stuff goes on all the time. So
sadly.
Yeah, very much so.
I do notice, and I mean, I wasn't, that movie probably takes place, I'm trying to know what time period that takes place. I don't know. It feels like the 90s or something.
Maybe I was trying to think of like when it took place when they were kids. Right. That kind of seemed like
that was interesting to try to figure out. But I feel like today there's more and more of a understanding of this around wellness or just health and recovery. I mean, like just mental health and the needs for those things. I don't, like you said, even that long ago, which isn't that long ago, it was still a hush hush kind of mentality where nobody wants to like really talk about it.
Right.
I think that stuff's changed a lot as of late, and maybe that's something to do with COVID, but it is interesting because I don't even know what movies moving forward would look like around this stuff.
Yeah
It's interesting. But all right, well, let's get into it a little bit. You mentioned that and this movie is like totally full of trauma every which way. You've got a father who has been in prison, and then he's, you know, you got this nice little family, but then you get the sense throughout the story, you start to, you know, what I like about the movie is they just give you pieces as you're watching it.
Yes. It's not, you have to kind of piecemeal things together. Yeah, and so I guess like for listeners to understand, you know, you had the three boys in the beginning of the story. The one boy gets taken off in the car and the other two do not. So we had discussed before recording, you know, I feel like the two that didn't get taken in the car probably have some type of like survivor's guilt. I feel like as it kind of comes out through the movie, right? Because they were not the ones that got taken away in the car. And Sean Penn actually makes that statement. So when his, fast forward through, Sean Penn's daughter ends up getting murdered.
So yeah, then she gets murdered and then it becomes a murder mystery kind of story. Yeah.
And when he's sitting there with, I think it was the police, maybe Kevin Bacon, I think, who was one of the other boys involved. he shares a story and he's crying about his daughter and he makes the statement, you know, what if I was the one who got into that car instead of him? And if I had gotten into that car, then maybe I wouldn't have had my daughter and then maybe she wouldn't be dead right now.
Man.
So he goes through this whole cycle in his brain of like this survivor's guilt, I think, from not being the one to be taken away in the car, and then also the guilt of his daughter dying and actually thinking, had I been the one to go in the car and get molested, then my daughter wouldn't be dead right now. It was just a really wild conversation.
It is. And I think that's a great moment, like in terms of talking about what we do, what people, how they handle trauma or just even bad things happening, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like it's, I'll even talk personally, like I'm going through this experience and it's funny how much you'll take the blame for things that maybe you don't, I don't know, like why, you know, that's crazy. That's sad that he would think that, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, and how many people go through that when there's loss of a family, like a person specifically that you somehow feel like it's your fault. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what that would feel like with a child. I'm sure that's what a lot of people do. I'm sure you could have gone down every road that night. Like,
absolutely.
We shouldn't have let her go out. She should have just stayed home. And, you know, we could have been at the communion together the next month. Like, you know, I'm sure that there's so many things you could do to say you did something wrong. Even, like, for him to think he did something. Obviously, when people have trauma, like being, you know, molested in some way or whatever happened to him, that it somehow was his fault.
Right.
You know, I'm sure he could have said, oh, I was doing something bad. I was writing my name in the cement and now right. look what happened to me, you know, or whatever you come up with and that whole thing that you do to yourself. It's kind of crazy. Like right. what we do as people trying to make sense of something that doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting to me. And I love scenes like that. I love real scenes like that. Yeah. I also like the scene with him on the porch. Is that the one we're talking about where he's on the porch at the house, all the family members are over and he's like, I can't cry. I just can't cry for her. And he says,
yeah,
you're crying right now.
That was a different scene.
That's an early on scene.
Yeah. That was post because the scene where he is making the statement, you know, if I had gotten to the car, I believe they were sitting at a table somewhere.
Okay.
And I think it was with the cops. I'm not sure. So the scene you're talking about was kind of post and he was with his friend. And not to confuse everyone listening. So if we back up, right, there's the three
sure.
the three boys. The one gets taken away in the car and is molested as a child. They grow up to be adults. One of those three boys, which is Kevin Bacon, mm-hmm. becomes a police officer. Sean Penn is the one who did some jail time, you know, has a family, da-da-da. The other guy, of course I can't think of his name, is the one who was taken away in the car, molested. And he's now also married. I can't remember actually if he even has a child, but
he does.
Okay, so he does have a child.
He has that little boy. He has a little boy. Who he says the weirdest shit to all the time.
So
I'm just like, what are you saying to this kid?
Right.
It's so crazy.
Well, because he's messed up in the head from his experience that he's never dealt with. So he, you know, fast forward, Sean Penn's daughter gets murdered. They don't know how, right? As the story starts to unfold, it starts to become apparent that people think that the other friend who was molested is the killer. But at the time that they're sitting on the porch, it's like super unknown. You know, Sean Penn isn't thinking that at all. And he's sitting there having this conversation and I'm watching because I actually thought he had killed the daughter too because his behavior is so
strange. I mean, I think everyone's thinking that most of the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
And because he had come home one night from the bar bloody, he had gotten into a fight with someone and you just automatically assume that that's what it is. But yes, Sean Penn is sitting on the porch and it's just a really kind of profound moment where you're sitting there thinking like, Jesus, this guy is like confiding in his friend about his father's death and this guy's murdered his daughter.
I know. And he's like sitting there like mm-hmm. just hanging out with him.
Right.
So this movie is really wild. I wonder
the movie is kind of like a mind fuck because you don't really know for certain what's going on and there seems to be like different little side stories going on.
That's an interesting topic too because I love when movies do this because I think that's a comment on what we decide to make up stories about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's that too, which is like you see a bunch of things and then you decide like this is what this person is and that's what they're doing and there's a lot of that going on because everyone's trying to make sense of this whole thing. And so you've got I felt so bad for the wife, Marcia Gay. Marcia. How she's dealing with this thing, which mm-hmm. to me felt totally nuts.
Yeah.
For him to come in the night covered in blood And he's like trying to tell her this story, and she's like, "What are you talking about? Like, what happened?" And then the things that evolve after that, which is there's no news in the paper. It's starting to look like,
right,
you know, he was at the bar that night. Yeah. I mean,
and
all these things. Yeah,
he comes in the middle of the night and claims that he got mugged on the way home from the bar,
right,
and that he basically injured the person who mugged him in order to, you know, save his own life. And he thinks that maybe he killed this person that he mugged.
Which, there's a lot of secrets going on.
Yes.
Which reminds me of other stuff, but it's just, I don't know. And also you add all this and then it's like, what do people do with that?
Yeah. Well, you think about the wife. You watch her story unfold as she listens to her husband's story. You can tell she doesn't fully believe it the night he comes home. And then the next day she's in the paper looking and doesn't see anything about a mugging or, you know, like a victim being found. And as the story goes on, and then when the daughter turns up dead, you see her face. So you see this wife who's struggling with believing her husband and trying to wrap her brain around the fact that her husband may have in fact murdered somebody.
Well, somebody did end up dead.
Yes.
He was at the bar. And here's the thing, and this is why, because he is lying.
Yes.
He is lying, and he's not telling her the truth. So that's really the piece. I mean, if you got mugged and whatever, I would go to the cops regardless.
Right.
But that's not what happened to that guy, right? That's the point. So, wow, this movie.
Yeah. And, you know, and I wonder too, I was wondering because it's not really clear. Maybe I missed it in the movie. I'm not sure it's clear as to whether or not his wife may or may not have known about what happened to him as a child.
That scene where he talks about vampires, that's what I was just thinking of that.
Uh-huh.
Where he's kind of like, God, man, this guy's really messed up. Mm-hmm. Tim Robbins, you play a lot of messed up people. Just letting you know. I've seen a bunch of other movies with him. Play some funny guys, too. But this is like a dark... This guy is like really not okay. Mm-mm. On 100 levels. And she comes home that night and he's sitting dark in the dark room and he's watching some vampire movie. Mm-hmm. And she's like, "What are you watching?" And he's like, "It's a vampire movie." And then he's like, "I'm a vampire." You know, he's like, "Vampires."
I thought he was going to attack her.
Did
like
you?
As I'm watching the movie, I was getting nervous. Yes, because I was in my head. I was like, "Oh gosh, he's going to get up and like take this situation out on his wife." That was my first thought.
Yeah. Well, she's like kind of coming clean and like, you know, they came and talked to me and, you know, I don't know what, you know, and he's like, she said what she said, which was a lie. I said I was asleep. And then he's like, "Good. That's a good thing that you said." And she's like, what has happened here? And then that's when he starts talking about him wishing he was a vampire because he's dead on the inside. You know, it was this whole analogy, this whole like thing. And he's werewolf, like wolves took over him. Uh-huh. And it was really upsetting. And I just, oh my God, it was just like very, very upsetting.
Yeah.
And so sorry, I don't know what to say.
What I think is implied is that his wife is not aware of what happened to him as a child. And so here this poor woman is married to a man that she fell in love with who is gradually over time emotionally falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And she has no clue why. And it appears to just be craziness. But, you know, and in a sense it is. But maybe had she known what happened to him as a child, there could be some discourse about it to discuss it and work through it.
Get some help.
As opposed to acting crazy.
Yeah. And the thing is, too, luckily they don't go into this, but, you know, I always think of, and this isn't to stereotype anyone, please don't get mad at me, but, like, you know, there's a history of people dealing with trauma and things like this by medicating it. Mm-hmm. You know, in a lot of movies you see people drinking a lot, they're at the bar, they're medicating with the only thing they know how, which is to just do that, you know? And there is no conversation. There is no talking about it. There is no nothing. So that's what people do, you know? Mm-hmm. Or I guess violence.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I think this is a comment on, is like people that don't have the tools and the only way of handling things is to know what they know, right? Mm-hmm. And I wondered if, you know, I think what's really interesting about a story like this is that because you're now with these people, like Marsha's character, where you're trying to figure it out too, is that I was coming up with things that were crazy in my head. I was like, is this guy, like, did he molest her? That's what I honestly thought.
Of his wife.
No, I mean like the girl. Like I thought he had a weird moment because you know there is that thing where people that are, you know, I hate saying that word, but you know they've been abused and then they become abusers and they don't want to, but it just like happens. And I thought, did he do that? Did he like decide? Did that happen? And then he killed her by accident because he realized what he had done. But all of that was kind of floating in my head and. I thought that was the story I was coming up with too. Yeah. Was it maybe it was an accident, but that's maybe why. Yeah. Because he doesn't trust himself, you know?
And that's a legitimate thought because the scene in the bar, the night where she gets murdered, you know, he's at the bar that she is at. I mean, they're not there together, but the gentleman is at the bar and Sean Penn's daughter is there. She's I think she's 19 in the movie.
Yeah.
And so she's out with her girlfriend. She's drunk. She's up on the bar dancing, like acting a fool. And he's there at the bar drowning his sorrows, kind of depressed. And somebody makes a comment to him about her not knowing that he knows who she is. And he kind of looks up at her and looks at them and he has a weird look on his face. And he just makes some kind of comment about how he's known her since she was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this weird moment where you can't tell if it's meant to be taken like in a creepy way or in a non-creepy way. And so, yeah, you're right. The whole movie, like I said, is just a mind fuck because it creates these pockets where you can make up your own. And even with, so her boyfriend, right? The daughter's boyfriend, they had these plans to go out to Vegas.
Yeah.
The day after this all happened. And at one point in time, they find out that the gun that was used was her boyfriend's dad's gun because her boyfriend's dad was a big criminal. And so they bring him in for questioning and they're questioning him about this gun. And this kid is like crying and looks legitimately upset. I believed him.
Yeah.
I was pissed when he went home and looked for the gun. I was like, motherfucker, he did know there was a gun. Because I really thought he was telling the truth. So he's getting interviewed about this gun. He's swearing up and down, you know, his father's gun didn't have a gun. Da, da, da. And then next scene, he's in the house looking in the ceiling and the gun's missing. So he knew all along there was a gun. And I was like, oh, I totally misread that scene.
I think that the whole movie's doing that to us, where it's just leading us in different directions and then making you question yourself.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't who they seem.
Yeah, they're not.
Nobody is who they seem. And this is a theme. It's funny. I could do a really good comparison with this in this TV show, I was just saying, because it's the same stuff is going on in that show, where people aren't what they seem. Mm-hmm. And it's a guessing game the whole time. Definitely says a lot about trust and who do you trust. And
we could do a whole podcast.
I know.
That.
I mean, that's a whole other one, you know, yep. That's a really interesting one too. Which is a hard one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I could get really personal here. Should I get
could.
Personal?
I could.
Well, you know, I keep connecting for me personally. I kept connecting with Marcia. That's probably why I keep bringing her up. And just in this way that you don't know who you think you know.
Yeah.
And I think that was really scary to watch her unravel because she was really grappling with that in this kind of quiet way. And being really confused and also do I trust this person now? And like you said, at one point you're like, is she going to get killed? Like, is he going to attack her or something?
Yeah. It's kind of like this eye of not trusting and this, you know, betrayal.
Yes.
That piece just like emotionally unraveling you know, and we are talking, if we bring it back personally, right? We were talking about earlier, I was saying I'm going through like these waves, emotions of like bits of anger coming up and not to get into all the details, but something popped up on Facebook. You know, you got a lot of Facebook memories. So Facebook likes to share things
with me all the time.
It
really does.
And about a week or so ago, so now as I'm saying it out loud, I know where my anger is coming from. About a week or this image pops up on my Facebook memory and I'm like immediately triggered because it's a photo of myself and a female who was involved with my ex-husband.
Okay.
Who was a friend of mine. And this photo pops up and it literally, the date is on it and it was taken during about 2 months prior to us separating. So at the time of the photo, we were out for a girls' night and that situation was already going on behind my back at that particular moment in time. So here I am just like waking up to get ready for my day. And here comes this image, you know, popping on my Facebook screen. And it took me back. And I literally had to sit there for a while and process it and go through like, ooh, that was the date.
Yeah.
We were out for a girls' night. And then here I am like rehashing in my mind this whole story of what occurred. And it's this whole idea of this person, these people not being who you think that they were, these people who you were supposed to trust and love and be your friends and so on and so on. So it's interesting because now almost 2 years later, I'm still processing that.
Mm-hmm.
And even like with other things going on. So it's this whole process of you think you know somebody, but they're wearing this crazy mask. Masks. Now we're all maskless, right? At some point in time, everyone's going to be maskless.
Funny.
Like you can't wear your mask forever.
No. Yeah.
In any way.
And what do you do with it? Like you said, you got angry. Like I think another theme in this movie is how people deal with that. And some and you know, for Sean Penn's character, for Jimmy, it's revenge.
Yeah.
You know, actually, I'll walk through him just for a minute because I like there was an interesting dynamic between the way each of them handled this thing. You know, it got Kevin Bacon. I know he's just the cop, but he's very avoidant of relating to these people anymore as part of them. He just is like, didn't you find that interesting? Like the way the cops come in and handle this whole thing was very unemotional.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost disturbing the way they were like, all right, yeah, okay, over here. Yep, it's blood. Yep, okay. Like there's not, you know, get the psych in. Did you get the shrink? When they're dealing with Sean Penn's reaction to finding out that his daughter's dead.
And that scene, it gives me the chills.
Yeah,
that scene was
but that was so huge to me because not only is he completely raw, he's like not a quiet guy. He's not going to be like, what's going on? You've got Kevin Bacon who's handling this guy that he grew up with. I know he doesn't see him anymore, but like with no emotion. Mm-hmm. He's literally like, did you get the shrink? Did you do this? And it was just so weird to watch that happen. Mm-hmm. And
it's about control. You know,
I think it was really
Kevin
interesting.
Bacon, his trauma response is like being that person in control of the situation and not allowing his emotions to surface.
Yeah, that was really crazy. And then Sean Penn, who just, and I think there's those scenes, I don't know why he too, it stuck out to me just the way he handled it. And I thought there were so many great scenes around that. Like he kind of, even though he's the revenge guy and he's going to take care of it, you know, once he gets past a certain point, his way of facing it was really bold.
Mm-hmm.
The scene where he's in the funeral home and the guy's like the funeral director, whatever, he's saying like, talking about the obituary.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like, you know, you have to do this. And he just cuts him off and he's like, I want to see my daughter. And the guy's like, or he says, where is she? And he's like, she's in the basement. And he's like, I would like to see her, you know? And the way he confronts it is like really amazing to me. So his daughter, I mean, I can't even, his daughter is laying on a slab and he walks right over to her. And as he's looking at her, he starts dictating what he's going to say.
Mm-hmm.
And, or what needs to be said. And I thought, whoa, man, look at how this guy handles this loss.
Mm-hmm.
He's just going to walk right up to it. And he just, you know, it's kind of amazing to me. And everybody deals with it differently, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got David, the, you know, Tim Robbins character is completely, he's so mentally abused from the situation that he cannot, it's like he's shut it away.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this whole fantasy, not fantasy, but this world that he's created, this story of like monsters. And he's living in this like childlike, creation of like evil.
Yeah.
Instead of talking about what it actually is, he's talking about it at night with his son in bed. His kid is going to bed and he's telling him this crazy story about wolves coming to eat you. And like, I'm just thinking like, this is how this guy's handling this. This is really upsetting.
I didn't really think about that until you just mentioned it, right?
Yeah.
When you watch these three guys and how each of them suffered a similar or related trauma and they all handled it, processed it differently and became, you know, different sets of human beings as adults. And I listened to this podcast this morning, one of Oprah's Soul Sunday podcasts, which I don't know why I just randomly started listening to that shit this week, but some of it's really good.
Why not?
So the one I listened to this morning, interestingly enough, was from a gentleman, of course, I can't think of his name, but they actually wrote a book together all on trauma.
Oh, wow.
And this guy on the podcast is discussing this idea of the human brain. And he describes it, you know, he says, think of your brain as like an upside down triangle. And the bottom of your triangle is all this other stuff, like things that are happening to you, your experiences, emotions. And at the top of your triangle is like your cognitive processes.
Okay.
So he basically is really relating it to children. So it makes sense. So if you're looking at the bottom of that triangle, if you have a child who's experienced like being molested or yes. being abused or all these things, if that's your starting block and the bottom of your triangle, you're never going to be able to access the top of the triangle, or at least not appropriately or That's effectively, crazy. Right? So when you're thinking about these kids who are going to school, right, who have been molested or are being abused at home or being neglected, and you're bringing them into the school system, and then you're expecting to like, boom, go right to the top of the triangle and be like, hey, you need to learn math and science and take your state tests and da-da-da-da. Well, the kid's brain is still on the bottom. You know, the kid's brain's on the bottom of the triangle. And it's stunted. So if you don't address the bottom or the base of the triangle, you're never going to get to the top. So it kind of makes sense, right, with that guy in the movie, right? Like he never addressed that bottom piece of that triangle, so that's where he stayed.
Yeah, and it's cryptic, you know, I mean, it's a sad moment where she's trying to connect with him and be like, tell me what happened here, you know? She's kind of like begging, like, what is... And he's just launching into this weird world that he's living in, and he's being completely honest. I mean, he's just... He's like, I'm a, you know, the vampires and the, he's just literally, he can't. He like literally can't.
So they all have different trauma, like survival mode, right? If you think of fight, flee, or freeze. So, you know, Sean Penn is like the fight guy. That's kind of how he's like
how he
doing whatever,
it. Yeah.
Right? Flee would kind of be the guy who got molested. He's just trying to pretend that it didn't exist and get away. And I feel like Kevin Bacon's kind of like freeze mode. Like he's just in, I'm just going to pretend none of this shit happens.
Yeah, and actually, you know what's funny? I just remembered he has something trauma too, and it's divorce. But there's this secretive, weird way that they show.
I totally forgot about that.
Right? There's this woman that's calling. It's obviously his...
Right.
What soon to be, and I don't even know what's going on. I mean, that made no sense to me.
No. That was a very, the first.
Did he say that she like left for another woman or something?
No. I just, my take on that was that.
That was so strange.
He's probably messed up in the head on some level too. And they were, it appeared that they were having marital problems and she was pregnant and she left the home and had the baby.
I kind of missed that piece.
Right. Left the home and had the baby somewhere else. And she's in this debate about coming back home to her husband. So the first couple scenes with them are literally just his phone ringing, and then you flash to the scene, and all you can see is like her mouth on
such
the phone.
Remind me of like an old movie where like they just do these strange, you know.
It was very bizarre. It takes the first call or two to really kind of figure out who she is. And then like by the third call, I'm like, all right, this is kind of getting annoying. Are you going to talk or not?
I know. And he's like, I can't do this one tonight. Boom. Yeah. He's and like, I just can't. I was like, good for you.
Interestingly enough.
Don't do it.
Yeah, I feel like. You know, you see the other two guys' lives, like, well, obviously the one guy is dead by the end of it. And then Sean Penn has now committed this horrific crime and has to live with it for the rest of his life. But Kevin Bacon has now somehow, his wife is coming home and he has the chance to, like, make things right and do his life different. So it's really interesting.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Maybe this is a little bit of a play on all the responses because this seems like it was a book, and I think that these aren't, you know, especially a book that gets turned into a movie. It's like, that's what it's really about. You know, there's all this stuff happening, but like, what is the movie really about? And how are these, I think it's about that, which is how do these people handle something like this? And with what they have, you know, in place in their lives from their childhood and from their experiences. And it's just crazy. It's, man, what a movie. Yeah.
And I think you're spot on when you talked about grief. Ooh. I'm going to have to cut this off soon. Sorry.
It's okay. It's quite all right.
You know, grief really is at the bottom of all of it. You know, it's like the grief from being molested as a child, the grief of kind of losing your childhood, the grief of Sean Penn losing his wife, the grief that Kevin Bacon from losing his wife, the grief of the other guy's wife when her husband is... I mean, it's just a ton of grief and loss all through...
Yeah,
everyone in their lives.
Yeah, and how people handle it. And people, like you said, and people that have what they have, which is maybe they don't have a lot.
Well, yeah, and the tools. It's all about, and that was the other thing that was on this podcast this morning, is you can have two people, and I talked about it on my podcast yesterday, which just aired. Two people can have the same experience. I shouldn't say the same experience. Two people can have the same incident, you know. Two people could lose their mother. Let's say, and both of them are going to experience that differently. And for one person, it might be very traumatic, and for the other, it's not. And that all comes from like what their own childhood experience was or what tools they have to deal with their shit.
Wow. True. Well, that's I have crazy. So many more thoughts, but I don't want to. I'll just ask one more. It's okay. Maybe
this
we'll just.
Really, there's a lot more to this movie to dissect.
Well, this is what I do. You know, I try to find the. I can make it into a lot of things, but I just like the. I like the themes of it. I like the acting was so good. I'll just say that. Like, these people are so good in this movie that you have to see this movie. I just thought it was really. If you can handle it, please give it a try. It's free on Netflix right now, so go for it. Did you have like? I know this is a hard movie to say to have a favorite scene or just the most impacting scene. Before I let you go.
Gosh, that's a good question.
Like what stood in your mind the most? Like what was the scene that really was like, wow, that was really intense?
I guess there's a couple. I mean, one is the opening scene that you mentioned, you know, when the kid gets taken away in the car. Because immediately you already know. You know, like that scene just kind of gets you in the gut. It's like, ugh. You know, like you want to jump in the car and rip him out and like... save him. And then you kind of get angry because like, you know, so I think that scene is really impactful. I think the scene where random squirrel thought did you see the little bird's nest up there? There's a little bird's nest right outside. You might not be able to see it from your angle.
I do see it.
I only saw because a bird came up and he's up there feeding a baby or something.
Oh, there's a cute little birdie up there. Like a positive cute. Note. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yes. That's a sign of something. The other scene I thought was really impactful was you mentioned already too when Sean Penn finds out that his daughter is murdered. And that is actually what drew me to the movie because the little blurb that Netflix shows is that scene of Sean. You don't really know what's happening yet. You just see Sean Penn come up and the cops and you see Kevin Bacon and then you see Sean Penn kind of like screaming and crying and then the view comes from on top and the cops are kind
of
like,
it's like a mob of
circling
people
him and bringing him to the ground.
Yeah,
right?
This one guy from like, you know, losing his mind.
So you can just, it's just like the pain and grief and like raw emotion from him in that scene. That's like just the real pain of losing a child.
It's amazing. Yeah. I was going to say, if there is a, what was I going to say? Oh man, my brain today. Is there resolution for these people? Like, is there coming through this or is this just an ongoing? I always wonder, like, at the end, do they give you some, maybe not like a positive ending, but like that there's been closure of sorts? But I feel like no.
Well, I mean, yes and no. Yeah. I feel like for Kevin Baker, where did I get that from? Kevin Baker. I've been talking
Baker.
All morning teaching.
It's okay.
For Kevin Bacon's character, I feel like he will have some closure because his wife is coming home. He has not, his way of dealing things with things was becoming a cop. You know, he doesn't have any other baggage. Like he didn't become a criminal. He didn't kill anyone, you know. So he's now, I feel like at the point at the end of the movie where his wife is coming home with his new baby and he has the opportunity to create a family and move on. Sean Penn has to live with what he's done now. He has to live with the fact that his daughter has been murdered and he killed the wrong person.
Yeah, and I guess they leave it because we don't know what will happen.
Right.
So it's just kind of, you know, that's how everyone did it. Yeah. That's what happened.
And then the other woman has to live with the unknowing of what actually happened to her husband, although
she
probably kind of knows.
But she knows, yeah. Yeah. Man.
Yeah.
Dude, everyone deal with their shit.
I don't think that...
Gotta find a way.
You know, at the end of the movie, they do come out and state that the other pedophile that the husband actually killed, right? Because he doesn't kill the daughter.
Right,
he does kill someone, but he kills a pedophile. I'm not sure that information was ever relayed to the wife in the movie. So my thought is, at the end of the movie, this poor woman is still uncertain as to whether her husband killed this poor girl. And now she is uncertain of where her husband has ended up. So that poor woman, I think, is not going to have a resolution.
No, probably not.
To anything.
Wow. More secrets. Mm-hmm. Well, this has been great. Secrets. I mean, I may like, I don't know. We'll see where I go with this, but check out some of these new movies that are coming out on Netflix.
I do want to watch that series on HBO. So
Mayor of Easttown, everyone watch it. I may try to snab or like not like somehow merge. If I can think of a way to do this, I'll bring these two together and like maybe have a second part of this that I'll slap into this podcast if I figure it out. But if not, it'll be on another episode. But I do want to get somebody to talk about that with me because it's very similar stuff and also trauma related in a lot of ways and amazing people. I mean,
And we could bring that in on the Be Soulfish podcast too.
Yeah, let's do it.
Like do on both.
Yeah,
like
let's do a mashup.
Yeah, because it all makes sense. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, and I really, you know, it's funny because there's a lot of this going on, and I'm going through a place where I'm trying to let go. I'll just share, like, you know, the stories of our lives just play in. And I mean, to get out of that loop is really a struggle. Mm-hmm. And I think, obviously, for some people, it's an unconscious loop. For me, I have a lot of awareness now, but I get angry about that. Mm-hmm. I get angry that the loop is there. And I'm like, why are you doing that now? Can you not play that tape today?
Yeah.
Like when you saw the Facebook memory, it's like, play the tape of 1980. Go, hit play, boom. And then your brain just goes and you're right back there.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem is like, I think dealing with the past, and this is going to be a whole other show for you, but like dealing with the past is crucial. However, when can we leave it? Because like that's where I am right now is like, I really am just tired of it.
Yeah. Well, I think,
and I'm angry too. You know, anger is a big one. And
there's nothing wrong with anger. And I think part of it is having the tools, right? So for me personally, when that photo popped up, had that photo popped up, let's say 10, 12 months ago, it very well likely could have ruined my whole day. You know, it could have been that thing that set the tone for my entire day and just destroyed me emotionally.
Right, yeah.
Now, 11, 12 months later, I'm able to look at that photo. I still get pissed off, you know. I still like recycle the shit in my brain. I have to sit with it for a little bit. And then it definitely popped into my head a couple times throughout the day. And I'm not going to lie, I texted it to a friend or two. And I was like, look at what Facebook is showing me today. You know, like, what the fuck? But I didn't let it ruin my whole day. So I think that's part of the process, like being able to have the tools to handle it, you know, because you can't get away from your story. But the woman I brought on the podcast yesterday is a feng shui and interior. She's a feng shui expert and an interior designer.
Wow.
Right.
Okay.
And she has a past too. Lots of abuse in her childhood and yada yada. And so that's essentially how she got into all of this. She, so now what she does is she works with, kind of going a little off topic, but not really.
That's okay.
She works with entrepreneurs who need to feng shui their space to have better energy, right? And so the whole conversation was about how our emotional clutter is connected to our physical clutter and physical space.
Damn.
You know, it's like when you watch the Hoarder show. These people are not just hoarding because they're messy. They're hoarding because they have mental illness or mental health issues or whatever. So fast forward, we had this whole conversation, and I basically brought up this thing where I'm living in, it kind of goes into what you're talking about, your story, and not be able to get away from it, right? So within my divorce, I lost my house and ended up back in the townhouse where my ex-husband and I had lived. So we lived in the townhouse together for 7 years. We moved to this house and used the townhouse as a rental. And in the divorce, I am back in the townhouse, which for me was very traumatic. One, because I was losing my what I considered home. And two, I had to go back to a physical space that for me, several things had happened in that home that were traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, there's a lot of like energy in that house that I can't get rid of. And I've been in the townhouse now for exactly 1 year this month. And I said, and I have just now in the last couple months started like purging things and cleaning up and like hanging a couple things up and making it look like my home now. And I said to this woman, you know, I'm having a really hard time getting this energy out of my house. Like, you know, I've painted, and I said, I can do all these things. And then every once in a while I'm sitting in the house and I'm like, I literally go into like a panic because I like feel the whole weight of everything. And I'm like, I need to paint the walls a different color, or I need to get a new couch, or I need to do, you know, like I'm trying to do all these things within the physical space thinking that that's going to change. And we were on a Zoom call for the podcast, and she looked at me and she goes, the energy's in you. And I was like,
exactly. Like, there ain't enough sage for this shit.
And I literally, as soon as she said that, I started crying, and I never cry on my own podcast, really. I started crying, and I was like, oh my God, you're right. You know, because I was like, you're right. Like, there's nothing wrong with this fucking house. It's a house.
No, and you know what? To your point, a hoarder, even if you don't fix the internal, they'll hoard another space.
Yeah, so it's a physical space.
Yeah.
And the only reason it's carrying that energy is because the energy is on my chest and my shoulders.
That's
so
deep, dude. Wow.
It's wild. So, yeah, I mean, it is hard to get away from your story. I just think it's a matter of taking time. So that was a big eye-opening conversation with her that I had, and it was about all kinds of stuff. But I mean, for me, I kind of left. I mean, I cried, and I was like, I don't really like the fact that I just kind of got called out.
well, that's a hard one, too, because then you're like, well, what do I do with that? You know, like,
now, what am I supposed to do with this energy?
I am doing all I can, and like, I'm working on my, because you are, I mean, obviously, and that's tough.
Yeah. I think it's just part of its time. Not the time. I hate the whole phrase time heals because it doesn't. But I think it's partial time and then, like, you know, partially just doing the work. Like, so I just have to sit with that once in a while and accept what I'm feeling and going through. And like we talked before, like finding new outlets. So I do a lot of yoga, meditation, breath work, Pilates, riding my bike on the trail. And now I'm working with a new trainer and I'm boxing and I'm boxing the shit out of stuff.
I am so jealous of that shit. I know. I want to box. I was doing Ignite, but I don't think they're here now, are they?
They are still here.
Where are they at? Ignite, where are you?
She's in Rehoboth and she has a great program too.
Where? Where are they?
Up where she took over my studio space.
Oh. Yeah. No, but aren't they gone? I thought they left. They're still there?
Yeah. They're still there.
I don't know why I thought that.
Dollar store left. The Dollar Tree left.
Oh, that's what I thought.
But Ignite is still there. I started working with somebody else just because, mostly because of scheduling and stuff.
You can get somebody to do that?
And he does other stuff too. So I can give you his info. It's great. So it's a mix of like kickboxing, strength, conditioning, all this stuff. And I'm actually going to be working with him also to put together like a fusion flow for yoga for boxers. So
please do that.
In my mind, that's like the perfect mix, right? Yoga and boxing, because you have both.
Wow.
You have like the outlet for what you need and like strength and power. And then you also have the strength and power of the yoga, but the breath work. And it's really just a matter of controlling your mind.
Wow, we went off on a tangent, but that was a good one. Well, it was a good one, and I think it's important. I like to bring this stuff up, and I do think, you know, at the end times, sometimes you can talk about this stuff, even though I'm using a movie to talk about certain topics. It's like, what's the, you know, how do we take this stuff, and where do we go with it? I know that's hard to do in this short time, but I do think, you know, looking at it is what we're doing. We're bringing some awareness to why people do what they do, and I think these stories are great stories to show us examples of what's real. And and if anything, it makes you think about maybe your own life or about how you handle things. Yeah. And you have a different perspective of like why somebody might do something.
Yes. Well, that was part of the podcast this morning too with Oprah and this guy, which is driving me crazy, his frickin' name. But that was his statement. He said, you know, the goal of all of this and learning more about it is when you're looking at somebody else and their behavior is to, instead of asking, why are you behaving this way, to ask the question, what happened to you?
Wow.
And I find myself doing that a lot. Like when people are sharing stories with me about other people or someone's behaving some kind of crazy way with me, that's my first question. Mm-hmm. What happened to you to make you behave this way?
Right.
Like something had to have happened to you in your childhood or in your life for you to be responding to this situation in this way. Not that it makes it excusable or okay, but it at least allows you to have a little bit more compassion for people, because everybody is acting from their own experience and they're just not always aware of it.
No, and it's never really about you, I think, a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another topic, but I do think, especially people you run into in everyday life, not maybe not your ex person or whatever,
right.
but like, you know, and I would have people that have argued with me and said, if you listen to certain things, that even all of that is nothing to do with you, which feels hard because it does feel like it. But, you know what? Thanks for coming, man. Thanks. For we did some talking, guys. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Check out some movies. I will have recommendations. Mayor of Easttown. Please watch it. If you have HBO, you have to see it. And we'll maybe talk about that. But,
Did
another time, yeah.
Yeah.
And check out Tara's podcast, Be Soulfish.
The Be Soulfish podcast. I've been off the grid a little bit. So yesterday was my first recording in about a month, but today it just launched. So it's episode 28. Mm-hmm. And I have a couple other people lined up for the month. So I'm hoping to record again and launch every other week.
Well, listen, there's lots of content. Everybody, listen. There's plenty of tools out there. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Don't hide in the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's people out there.
Can't put shit under the rug. It always comes out.
Don't, and get your sage out. I don't know. Do whatever you need.
Lots of sage. Actually, not sage, because they're talking about how sage is being like overcropped.
Is that right?
Yes, it's a whole thing.
Screwing up the energy.
So you're not really supposed to be using sage anymore, and if you do, use like the teeniest, tiniest piece.
What about
you break
Palo
off.
Santo? Can
Palo
I burn
Santo
that?
It's
more
is
positive,
good.
Right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, or just put on Netflix and eat some popcorn. Whatever works for you. But all right, everyone, have a great, great rest of your week, weekend, whenever this posts. And join us next time.
Cheers.
Thanks. Bye.